Now I'd like to invite our panelists, so all the speakers, and I'll introduce our panelists. We have Dr. Karen Stitzenberg from UNC, Dave Larson from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and Dr. Liliana Bordeneau, who had to travel the furthest from MGH here in Boston to come and participate. And we have a few cases that hopefully will illustrate some of the concepts that we've discussed. And these cases were specifically designed to allow us to talk about the management strategies in the context of multidisciplinary care. We'll have to pretend that we have experts here who are quite experienced in the multidisciplinary process, so we'll have to channel our inner radiologists and medical oncologists and radiation therapists and pathologists in the discussion. So I'm going to present the first two cases. We're going to go through them slowly, and then we'll have a discussion about them, and if we have time, we'll get to another one. So this is the first case. Dave and I have put some of these together. 60-year-old male with a screening. And by the way, none of the panelists have seen these cases before, so I think we'll have a lively discussion. A 60-year-old male underwent a screening colonoscopy that demonstrated an ulcerated mass at 8 centimeters from the anal verge. This is a well-differentiated adenocarcinoma on biopsy. This is a tumor that felt to be tethered on rectal exam at the lower edge. There were no other lesions on endoscopy. The patient has a BMI of 35, is a diabetic smoker. His staging workup, as all staging workups should include, included a CT of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis. There's no distant metastatic disease. I'll just share that with you. And the CA was 3.3. Here is the MRI, and this MRI demonstrates this to be a T3 tumor. You can see it's a T3B tumor with less than 5 millimeters of extramural penetration. No abnormal lymph nodes are identified, and as we learned from Dr. Benarski's excellent lecture, the radial margin looks quite clear. So what should be the treatment recommendation in this patient? And perhaps we can start with some of our panelists to ask what their approach might be in this patient. So Dr. Bordeneau, what do you think about the management of this patient? What should be the next step?
I hate to torture you because you probably don't have the picture, but I'd really love to see all the images on the MRI. I'm especially curious
Excellent
about
point.
This 8 centimeter distal margin from the anal verge, because in a male, that 8 centimeter could be right on the levator, so it could be a little bit higher. So my middle and your middle is very different. But assuming that I trust you and this is a mid-rectal cancer, but I would always do the proctoscopy myself and I would check and... because how many times have we all been fooled and we call something a middle cancer and then it turns out to be a low cancer, right? So the philosophical question that we're all struggling with whether or not this should go straight to the operating room or whether or not this is somebody that could need some sort of neoadjuvant therapy. And as there is a trial in Germany right now, it's the OCAM trial, which recruited, and they have the short-term results. And the short-term results is that as long as the margin is not threatened, we, the surgeons, now have learned how to do a complete mesorectal excision very well, and the success rate is quite high. But that's still to catch on in the United States.
So it sounds like there is an argument for ensuring the exam is complete, confirming that the MRI imaging shows what we think it shows, and then considering a primary surgery approach. What are the requirements for doing that? Dr. Stitzenberg, would you agree with that recommendation? And if, do you have an alternative approach?
At our institution, this patient would get neoadjuvant radiation for sure and prior to surgery.
And Dr. Kennedy, is that because there's a radiation therapist at the MCC who has to make sure that their discipline is supported?
I'm not sure. I think in Ontario, the standard or our guidance would be that all stage 2 and stage 3 rectal cancer patients should get long course chemo radiotherapy. However, I think the Mercury study and OCAM and our own group across Canada have shown that with early stage 2 and 3 good risk rectal cancers on MRI, that it's safe to do surgery. And OCAM and Mercury do have long-term outcomes with local recurrence rates around 4% and overall survival similar if you had preoperative chemoradiotherapy. So it's definitely something at our MCC that we would discuss whether this patient should have neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy radiotherapy as per our provincial guidelines, or whether this is a good prognosis tumor that we could take for primary surgery, but we're getting a little bit more comfortable doing primary surgery.
So, do you want to make another comment?
I just want to make a point that it would also matter a lot, not just the margin, but also where is the tumor. And an anterior tumor, an early T3, would warrant radiation consideration a lot more than a lateral tumor or a posterior tumor in this calculus.
I promise you we'll have more images on the next case. This is a posterolateral tumor. But Dr. Weiser, so what would be the criteria if we are going to consider a non-radiotherapy approach in this case? So this is a T3 by NCCN guidelines, which you showed this should be treated. But if we're to consider, because there is clearly evidence in support of primary surgery, what would be the criteria, both in terms of the preoperative workup and the operative management?
Yeah, I mean, I think we mentioned a lot of it. It's different if it's an anterior tumor or posterior. This is a heavy person. The lesion's below the anterior peritoneal reflection. I see a vessel there. Are you sure there's no extramural vascular invasion? I would agree this patient should get neoadjuvant treatment. I would enroll the patient in the PROSPECT trial.
Yes, over there.
So one thing we haven't, and I'm going to give the panelists an opportunity to circle back to this, but you haven't involved the patient at all in the decision-making process here, right? I mean, this is a case coming out of our MDT. We would say that this patient could go a couple different routes. They could go straight to surgery, or they could have neoadjuvant therapy, and the recommendation is that we go back to the patient and have a discussion about risks and benefits, because one of you guys showed very nicely the downsides to neoadjuvant therapy. There are consequences to that, right? So I think this is a case, and this is why we put it on. I think this is one where you have to go back and talk to the patient, because I think patients have a big say in where they go in this case.
But yes, the NCCN guidelines as of now say that they should all get neoadjuvant therapy. So whoever is taking the boards in the room, that's the answer.
Well, I will say that it is correct. We need more images to really have a complete picture on this case. But if we had a low-risk tumor and one were to consider an approach of surgery, certainly that would be associated with some improvement in functional outcomes. But it's predicated on the fact that that is a high-quality operation. That is, there is evidence in support of that approach, but it requires that the operation be high quality, that a total mesorectal excision was performed. And so those are factors that should definitely play a role in the decision making. What this patient underwent was neoadjuvant chemoradiation and then a low anterior resection, actually with coloanal reconstruction and loop ileostomy. The final staging or information is shown. It's a PT2N0 with widely clear margins. Let me move on to the next case. This is a 53-year-old gentleman who presented with hematochezia, medical history of hypertension. BMI is 32, so it's a kind of a recurring theme here, right? 60% of our patients will have significantly elevated BMI. Colonoscopy shows a mass at 10. This is a moderately differentiated adenocarcinoma. It's microsatellite stable, as is a young patient. What should be the next step in this patient's workup, Dr. Bernardsky?
Staging.
What should that staging include?
So obviously, just as you mentioned before, a CT scans rule out distant metastatic disease, but also a pelvic MRI to kind of fully locally stage the tumor.
So the patient did undergo a CT scan, and there shows no distant metastatic disease. Here are your multiple projections. So you have a sagittal projection, and you see the coronal projection, and here are the oblique axial projections of this tumor. You can see that this is, so I'm just going to, actually, I will not tell you what this is. I'll ask Dr. Bernardsky to tell us what he sees, since he's our radiologist today. And these are perpendicular to the tumor. They're not straight axials. I can give a hint too. If, you know, it's not really fair to put you on the spot like this, but
well, it's all right. I mean, it looks like there's some suspicious nodes potentially. I think the radiologist, at least at our institution, would give it the famous NX designation. But they're certainly at least suspicious by multiplicity, not necessarily by size. And the tumor, it's a little hard to tell, but it looks like it's probably an early T3.
Can I just give a couple of extra things that you could look at? So in that sagittal view, if you just look at the bottom of the tumor, you can already see that the way you're going to get this tumor out is by doing a complete total mesorectal excision as opposed to a tumor-specific mesorectal excision, that your anastomosis is going to end up being on the levators just because the tumor is so close to the coccyx by the time you count 5 centimeters below. You're there. And so this is somebody that you know for sure you're going to be diverting when the time comes. So you can start preparing that patient for the surgery just by looking at that image, which is a great one to use for counseling.
That's an excellent point. And in fact, I think that's a really important point. We often talk about distal margins and rectal cancer. And we need to ensure that we've completely resected the mesorectum up to 5 centimeters below the distal extent of the tumor. If there's less than that, then a TME should be performed. If there's more than that, then a tumor-specific TME could be performed. Dr. Efron, do you have any additional comments to make about the surgical strategy there? No? Okay. So this was staged by the multidisciplinary conference as an MRT3B, node positive, EMVI negative, CRM negative, lateral pelvic lymph node negative. So these are all factors that we want in our synoptic report so that we can manage the patient. And so what should be the next step in their treatment, Dr. Larson?
Well, it looks like he's going to get neoadjuvant chemoradiation therapy and subsequent surgery.
Based on
the diagnosis, the stage, the end stage, location.
Any other considerations? Just put them on chemo radiation? Are there any maybe trial options for a patient like this?
Obviously, prospect trial. Martin's already mentioned that. But so that looks like what you did.
There is another option, though. And I guess the option is, do we believe that those nodes are positive or not? And would that change in any way how we would approach that patient? Because they are indeterminate, they are heterogeneous, but by size, they are negative.
So I think that's, Liliana brings up an excellent point as well. That's why it's important for us to adjudicate this at the multidisciplinary conference. Is this the kind of case, Dr. Kennedy, where the decision making would have been influenced?
For us, I think so. Again, I think we are highly influenced by OCOM and Mercury and our own Quicksilver results. And so this would be a case we'd be discussing primary surgery versus neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy.
I think it's also another argument that it's very important for us to engage our radiologists. And at our institution, our radiologists sometimes actually come to the path lab so that they can get feedback on what they've seen on the imaging. And I think Aaron gave a great example of engaging your radiology colleagues. It's so important to do that. I think at the Mayo Clinic, the pathology is handled a very specific way, isn't it?
You mean in terms of
getting feedback
frozen,
to the team,
yeah, and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we commonly use frozen section, so we have the diagnosis beforehand or during the case itself, and it's rarely changed by H&E staining.
So you have immediate pathologist engagement.
Yeah, and so all of our feedback is also delivered back to our MDTs.
So this patient actually did randomize to...
Can I just say one thing, too? I think that it's also important to know that... like the assessment of lymph nodes on MRI and any modality is not great. It might be 60 or 70%. So just because the radiologist says it's positive, there's a lot of small nodes that end up being positive, and then there's a lot of large nodes that end up being negative. So certainly if we do primary surgery and it comes back as a positive lymph node, if the margin is negative, then we don't give radiation and we'll give the patients chemotherapy.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in just 1 second. So this patient did complete half of their intended radiation, turned out had a DPD deficiency and could not tolerate the capecitabine, resulting in a bit of a treatment break. And this is the restaging MRI. And we'll just very quickly go through the restaging. You can see endoscopically that there was response, but there still is residual ulceration. The primary tumor itself is a lot smaller, and the lymph nodes actually have all but disappeared. So this patient underwent a low anterior resection with total mesorectal excision and diverting loop ileostomy. The residual 3.2 centimeter tumor, TRG2 with 60% viable tumor, 4 centimeter distal margin, even with TME, 2 centimeter radial margin. And there you can see the YP staging, T3N0 of 35 lymph nodes, LVI negative, PNI negative, tumor deposit negative. So, maybe I'll skip the first one for one moment. let's assume this patient didn't have the DP deficiency, did complete their treatment. What's the role of adjuvant chemotherapy? Dr. Weiser, and then maybe Dr. Stitzenberg can comment.
So this is this can be quite controversial, and it will depend on where you're treating patients, North America versus Europe. In North America, it still remains standard to give patients adjuvant chemotherapy after chemo radiation. We don't know if those lymph nodes were positive to start with or a reaction. If they were positive, the patient would be at risk for distant micrometastases that we think have not been fully treated with the 5-FU with radiation. That said, I think I presented the data, and it's not very clear. The data is all an extension of colon cancer data. We really don't have strong rectal cancer data.
And that's the trump card that I was holding, because there is another option on this patient from the beginning. If you're not sure about the lymph nodes, but the radial margins are negative, that would be a person who could get short course radiotherapy and then go straight to surgery. And then you would know for sure whether or not their lymph nodes were involved, and then they would get chemotherapy if the nodes are positive, or you could spare them chemotherapy without the angst of it if the nodes are negative. And I think that in this situation, non-threatened margins, so you don't worry about tumor shrinkage, and the questionable lymph node, short course radiotherapy is underutilized in the States, and we should think about it more.
So, you want to make a comment, Jonathan?
Yeah, again, going back to Dave's comment on what the patient wants and what the patient thinks, I have many people coming in and asking me, what can I do to see how can we maximize my effect to get a complete clinical response before we do any surgery? And if we do that, or when we do that, do we have to go to surgery? And so when you think about it, there's some data now to support that adjuvant chemotherapy with short course radiation therapy increases your complete clinical response. I mean, the prospect data will hopefully help support that further. But I think it's another conversation that I find I'm having that goes beyond just the local recurrence data that we're talking about with these patients.
So before we just have just a couple more minutes, I want to give Dr. Stitzenberg a chance to make some comment about how should we utilize should we be utilizing pathologic lymph node status in a situation like this for adjuvant therapy decisions after neoadjuvant therapy?
Forgive me, I missed what the past stage on this was.
YPT0.
It was
YPT3N0.
Yeah, so I think there's definitely a discussion to be had there. I would say most commonly our patients in this situation would probably see adjuvant 5-FU. I'm not sure that they would see adjuvant FOLFOX, and some may not see chemo at all, again, depending on how they did with surgery and that risk-benefit discussion about what the patient wants. But I think that there's not convincing data for any of them, and so that's where we most commonly fall.
Are there certain features on the pathology that might help impact that decision, Dave? Like, if you had seen the pathology specimen and were not sure that it was indeed a TME or perhaps it was not a high quality specimen, would that affect your decision making?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, whether there's good data or not, there isn't. I think everyone here has already suggested that, but we tend to over-treat. And if there's any abnormalities, any question about the quality of the TME, any information on LVI or PIN or any of these other factors, of course, then adjuvant therapy would certainly be a part of that treatment plan. And even without them, it tends to be part of the treatment plan in general, despite the evidence.
And I think it's going to end up being important as well to look at both the pretreatment stage and the pathologic stage, because that also may influence. If they had bulky lymphadenopathy to begin with, then regardless of if they're N0 on path, it's unlikely that we're going to recommend against chemotherapy. And vice versa, if they were T3N0 to begin with and now they're still T3N0 or versus T1N0, that may influence the decision as well.
So I think the take-home message here is that there are many factors that go into the preoperative treatment decision-making. There are very important factors such as the anatomy of the tumor, the status of the radial margins, the status of the lymph nodes, if we can identify them. There's the critical importance of preoperative imaging. I think everybody can agree upon that. There's critical importance of high-quality surgery. total mesorectal excision where appropriate and tumor specific for only the most proximal tumors. And I think one can see here is even among the panels, there's not agreement on how the management on each of these patients should go, which actually raises sort of the, or emphasizes a point that it's important for us to have a multidisciplinary discussion about these patients so that we have an opportunity to gain from the perspectives of the multidisciplinary team, although it's very important that we consider all of the principles that have been outlined in the presentations today. So I think we're out of time. We won't do any more cases, but thank you so much for being here. This has been a great panel. Thank all of you.